Thank you.
Thank you.
And Ms. Douglas is here as well.
Okay, so go ahead and come forward. Mark, can I swear them in together and just kind of take, or do we need to do this?
You can swear them in together.
Okay, and just kind of ask questions of both of them up front, then switch to the complainant as opposed to. Okay, thank you. Sorry that we're so behind schedule. This is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Tracy Marvell, DVM, and Dr. Brian Hader, DVM. Dr. Hader, you might have to mute your phone.
Or your pig.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
I could hear something. Case numbers 2469, 2470. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 32-2234. Dr. Marvell and Dr. Hader, please introduce yourself and your counsel for the record, please.
My name is Dr. Tracy Marvell.
And David Stoll appearing as legal counsel for Dr. Marvell.
Okay, Dr. Hader, your turn now.
Dr. Hader, owner of Desert Forest Animal Hospital.
Great, thank you. Thank you both, doctors. You've received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you have submitted. If either of you have additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now.
Madam Chair, I have a quick question for clarification. Mr. Stoll, are you representing both or one?
Just one, just Dr. Marvell.
Okay.
We do have a couple photographs just that may become relevant.
Okay.
During the course of.
Thank you. Sounds good. Okay, this proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned to this matter to give a brief summary of the case. Then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complaint will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask it through me. Let's see, Ms. Frost, would you please give us a summary of the case?
All right, I'm gonna do my best here. So on November 20th, a complaint was received by board staff about the conduct of two veterinarians at Desert Forest Animal Hospital, which also included potential premises issues. These two cases are separate, so I just want to make sure 2469 and 2470. In conjunction, on January 3rd, 2024, a drop-in premises inspection was conducted at Desert Forest Animal Hospital. The hospital had a change of owner and responsible vet in 2021, and due to COVID procedures, had a self-inspection. An in-person inspection was planned when the complaints were received.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Marvell, at this time I would like to swear you in. I'm going to do you first. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay. Dr. Hader, I will now swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that the information you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you. I would now let Dr. Marvell, since you're here in person, give you the opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
Just before she begins her response on the subject of additional materials, ahead of the informal interview, we submitted two statements. I just want to make sure that you all have them. If not, I've got additional copies. There's a statement from Danielle Erskine, who is a practice manager in a CBT, and also employee Michaela Hart. Go ahead.
Thank you. Please remember, these complaints were filed by a disgruntled former employee, Ms. Douglas, who worked for Desert Forest Animal Hospital for about 4 months, She quit abruptly without notice immediately after being written up for failure to follow hospital policy. I appreciate the board's attention to the details of the complaint and your thorough investigation. I want to quickly address your main concerns at the last meeting about the feline blood drawing. I had the two statements, or the statement and the thing about Michaela, who's worked before Ms. Douglas and after Ms. Douglas, testifying never was caused to draw the blood. You've read it. So also about the butterfly catheters being available. So no one is forced to draw blood my way. And you expressed concern, several of you, about the way I drew blood, and that you hadn't done it, hadn't seen it. And I don't draw blood very often anymore, so I rarely draw blood, but I did try to draw blood that way. So I have a little video which I tried to send to you, but it was too big for me to send. But if you just wanted to see a cath that I'm drawing blood that way, I do have a little video. It takes about a minute if you want to see it. But the cat came in for biting the owner, bad behavior, tried to draw blood. I couldn't draw the blood through the neck, but he never struggled, never had any issue, and the techs ended up getting with the butterfly catheter. I've done this method for over 40 years with no complications. No cat has ever died. No cat has ever passed out. No cat has ever had any ill effects. It was shown to me by my mentor, Dr. Bill Quist, who is a well-respected veterinarian, who also showed me the cold sterilization. There seem to be some questions about the cold sterilization instruments as far as aseptic technique is what I can figure out. I did take a picture of the cold pack. You didn't see it when you did your inspection, but it was being used at in a veterinary dental procedure at the time. We do use Alquinox, which is the surgical instrument sterilization for that pack between every procedure. So they're clean in this solution, they're instrument lube, they're dried. The tray is cleaned and then it's put back in and then it's ready for the next use. So I have been doing that for 40 years with no problems that I'm aware of. But I would say after this complaint and your concerns about it, I did instruct the staff to completely autoclave all the instruments that are autoclavable. So we are no longer using the cold pack. Otherwise, my aseptic techniques, I think, are pretty standard and have not caused any problems. With regard to the cleanliness of the facility and the other premise issues, I wouldn't work in a practice that I didn't feel was clean and didn't have a sterile surgical suite. I'm not the premise license holder, but I can tell you that these allegations aren't true, and the things that were evident in the complaint, we have made changes. For example, we are no longer re-sterilizing suture. You know, we've looked at everything else, and you know, anything that needed to be changed or addressed was addressed. So thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay. So before we move on to Dr. Hayter, let's go ahead and ask if any board members have questions of Dr. Marvell first, okay?
I'll go first.
Great.
So in regard to the feline blood collection technique, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I guess my thing is that I haven't been doing this as long as you have, and it's great to have the knowledge and talent that you have, and that you're serving the profession so well. As far as the restraint technique, you know, having been taught that 40 years ago, and then what we're doing today, I think the biggest thing is understanding, you know, do you believe that's the best method for collection? And again, with what the profession has produced, and professionals such as like Dr. Sophia Yin, you know, what methods are encouraged in the practice for collection and restraint in feline patients? Because again, just because you can
I
do it.
I consider concerns, sure, absolutely. I mean, I never had any concerns about it until this complaint. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say, I went home and I did this. You know, what does that feel like? Because I never even really thought about it. And and I would say that, like I said, I don't draw blood very often anymore, so I'm really not drawing blood. And none of the technicians use that technique, so it's kind of a moot point.
So what you're saying is you wouldn't necessarily use it moving forward?
Particularly with, yes, your concerns about it, absolutely okay. Not.
So I want to clarify, so well, you no longer do that?
No. Okay. I mean, I did it once to kind of just show you in case you wanted to have a view of what it looked like, but I'm not really drawing blood in the practice anymore.
And what do the other people do?
And they use the butterfly technique on the saphenous vein. It's really the most common
Thank you.
Yes, and there were butterfly catheters available all the time.
So then another piece of that, so you don't really draw blood anymore, probably been a period of time if you do have a team.
Yeah.
So how would this complaint come to be if it's not a technique that's used at all in your practice?
You'll have to ask Ms. Douglas, because I don't know. You know, I'm not watching the technicians draw blood. You know, they're in a room separate, drawing their blood. They're using usually the saphenous technique, as far as I know, so I don't know. No, and there's never been any policy, never mandating that. I mean, if anything, you know, I had shown them, because usually when I do it, it's because they can't draw the blood. And so they're kind of at a loss. And so then I would show them, well, this is the technique I use, but I'm generally not drawing blood. And I won't use that technique in the future.
That's the answer we want.
Clearly it's an issue.
And then as far as cold sterile, so I'll pass this along, but this is a picture of the
right.
pack. What is this for?
That's just, you know, that's a standard cleaner that you use for surgical instruments. That's used on the cold pack instruments. Then their lube, which is the middle one, and then they sit in the chlorhexidine solution, which is the cold sterilization.
Okay, so you know chlorhexidine is not cold sterile, right?
I know that now.
Okay. Because that is cold sterile, and chlorhexidine are very, very different
things.
Yes. Okay, because there is a product for cold sterile, this is not it.
Okay.
And so again, there part of this is right, but that is absolutely
right.
not.
And we're not doing that anymore.
Okay. As far as, could you share with me the suture piece? Because from the inspection, there were photos of suture stored in some dram vials, which are vials we traditionally use for medications being dispensed. So how did this come to be, and how does this work? There's names of the type of suture, but not the aught or if it's a swedged on what the needle is. So how did you pick and choose?
Personally, I chose monofilament sutures, so nylon, PVS, that we would clean with alcohol if there were pieces left over, and then we would put them in the Novasan to use. So, you know, it never caused any problems, but, you know, we're not doing that anymore.
Okay. So as far as the integrity of the suture, utilizing like an alcohol and a chlorhex, I mean, there's no concern about suture integrity here?
No, and it was never a problem.
And then how did you keep track of like what patients various pieces were used on, possible nosocomial infection or expiration of the product?
Well,
how did you keep track of the lots?
The sutures that we used were not expired, obviously, when we used them initially, and they were used quickly in the hospital as we went along. And as far as the aught, that's just something after 40 years I know what 2-0 looks like, what 3-0, so I would note whatever I was using.
So share with me then, since sutures used so quick, about the suture that expired in 91.
There was a stock of old sutures, as well as old expired blades that I use for knee crossings. And if, I don't know if she noted, but they were on the very top cupboard, not used by anybody else but me for knee crossings, for suturing knee crossings.
And are those gone now?
Yes. Danielle, the office manager, took everything very seriously. They went through the whole office. I know Annalise was very thorough, but she quit at some point in time, and we went through, got everything else. Anything that she mentioned that was a concern, we have addressed. And I'm not the practice owner, but I'm there 2 days
well,
a week,
and
I see what they're doing. So I see that they have thrown away all the sutures. They have, you know.
And the reason I'm asking you is because you were cited by the CBT on staff that you're the hoarder doctor. So
I'm the what?
Hoarder.
Order?
Order, like I keep all the things.
Keeping old stuff.
I do keep old stuff, but it's, you know.
But you've let go of those things.
Of course, everything is gone.
Okay. Now, as far as the donated medications, tell me how you use these.
Mainly I use them for my own use or for the staff, or we do a couple different rescues. Like when we get ketoconazole, I would give that to the Boxer Rescue, and then we do Feathers Rescue, which they have a lot of old dogs that are unadoptable, so they're like 16-year-old chihuahuas with horrible teeth, arthritis, coma, all that. So if we do get medicines donated back, they are a lot of times given to those people under our supervision.
And so even the expired or not properly labeled?
No, they're properly labeled. If I sent anything with them, it would have been properly labeled.
Okay. So tell me about the controlled substances then.
I don't know anything about the controlled substances.
Can I ask a question here before you move on to the next one? Thank you. Can you clarify when you said you use some of these for the donated drugs for your own use?
For my dog.
For your dog.
Yes. Okay. I mean, they donated back Serenia. I'm not going to throw that away. You know, maybe I am supposed to, and if you're going to tell me I have to, I will, but I'll take that home and I would use it on my own dog when she needs it.
I just wanted to make sure, clarify it was for your dog.
Yes, sorry.
Thank you. Go ahead, Nikki. Sorry.
Okay, so nothing, no use of controlled substances.
No.
All right, that's all the questions I have for Dr.
Maribel. When you talk about the medications donated and you produce a label, is that pet-specific label?
Yes.
Because it sounded like you said, I get ketoconazole, I give that to the Boxer Group.
I probably would have given that just to the Boxer Group, the ketoconazole, because they've got their own veterinarian and he dispenses it or she dispenses it. But this Feathers Foundation they bring their animals into us and we could give that to them as well.
So to be clear, you have or would give a bottle of ketoconazole to a rescue group?
I would.
Okay.
Any further questions of Dr. Marvel? Okay, thank you. I'm gonna have you both step back. I'd like to give Dr. Hayter a chance to address the board, and then we'll go to board questions, okay? So, Dr. Hayter.
Thanks so much. I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person, but I appreciate you letting me phone in. I just want to reiterate a lot of things that Dr. Tracy was saying, that we took this complaint very, very seriously, and, you know, the next day, we were remediating these items, making sure that everything we were doing that wasn't up to standards of care, you know, was updated, getting rid of everything, the suture material. The policy now is not to take back drugs from clients. If we have anything that expires, we're going through the reverse distributor that we've hired. And we plan on going forward, you know, making sure that all this goes really smoothly. Anything that we were doing, you know, it was in an effort to keep costs down for the clients, to bring resources back to the practice for the employees. You know, we're not a high volume clinic. We pride ourselves on doing high quality, serving the community. You know, we're always available to our clients. And anything we're doing was really in an effort to help people. And though I realized some of it was not good and subpar practices, you know, we weren't trying to do it to line our pockets with extra cash or something. I don't know if that's what it seems like to the board. We really take seriously and have always taken seriously our controlled substances. I do apologize on the lapses there, but I also want to reiterate, we're really meticulous about our logging. We're really careful, you know, making sure who's handling those and any new people, you know, we're watching closely. That's an important issue to me. I know there's a lot of problems with that stuff. I've known vets that have gotten in a lot of trouble. And so this lapse is something that we corrected right away, and we do not plan on ever repeating.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Hader, do any board members have questions?
I do. Dr. Hader, this is Nikki Frost. Maybe a little bit along the lines of what I got to ask Dr. Marval, but I would like to hear it from you. So you purchased the practice in 2021?
Correct.
Could you tell us what month?
February of 2021, approximately.
Okay. And then how long had you worked in the practice before you purchased it?
I never worked in the practice.
Before you purchased it?
No.
Okay. And so can you tell me about your experience with the feline blood collection technique utilizing a tourniquet on their neck?
Sure. I think the first thing that you know, I'm surprised hasn't been said in these two meetings is that it's not a tourniquet. A tourniquet is a pretty harsh, strong device where you could, you know, if you leave it on, you know, an arm too long, I mean, the arm could lose circulation and you could have huge problems, nerve damage, everything else. This is a rubber band with a hemostat. So it's used as a tourniquet, but it's nowhere near as forceful or as powerful as a tourniquet. When I first started the practice, I learned a lot of things from, you know, not usually directly from Dr. Tracy, but through the technicians. Our manager has been there 20 years. She worked with Dr. Tracy and her husband when they worked in the clinic together. Naomi has been there now 14, 15 years. And so there was a lot of things that came up, and they said, you know, Dr. Tracy tries things this way. And because I wanted to carry forward the spirit of this kind of country vet clinic, you know, I adopted a lot of practices. You know, I'm assuming all the others are above board, but this one in particular, it didn't stick for me, but it seemed really benign. I've seen technicians do it maybe a handful of times, really successfully in these blood draws. There's no requirement for any technician to draw blood in any particular way. You know, so I'm not sure, you know, how a technician can work in our hospital and think they're forced to do anything. Or if somebody tries to force them to do something, why they don't just say no, because it's simply not the case.
Any other questions?
So in regard to cold sterile, we have photos here. I don't know if you're familiar with them. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, yeah, so the cold sterile has been removed. We're not using it any longer. I think in some cases for infected wounds and abscesses, anything that was sterile, spays, neuters, you know, we were opening fresh packs of sutures, you know, we were really meticulous about sterile field and everything else, and we will be for everything going forward, you know, abscesses or anything else, you know, we'll be planning on doing that.
Okay. Any anything further, board members?
With the donated controlled substances, can you tell me how that process works?
Yeah, so that for me, out of everything that I saw, you know, that was my biggest concern was seeing, you know, that, and especially seeing it on paper. You know, I really regret, because as I say, we're meticulous about our controlled substances, and you know, I realized the grave importance of taking really good care of those. In this case, we took some of these back from clients. They were kept in the lockbox, and then for a hospitalized patient, you know, for certain cases, dispensed in hospital, not sent home to the clients with new labels. And we've disposed of those. They've been sent to a reverse distributor, Everyone has instruction that we don't take anything back from clients, and they'll receive, you know, detailed instruction on what to do with their controlled substances.
Okay, I don't have any other questions.
Okay. Anything further from board members? Okay. So Dr. Hayter, just hang tight now. We're going to hear from the complainant in this case. Ms. Douglas, if you'd like to come forward. Thank you for your patience and being here. I'm going to swear you in now. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
All right, thank you. And obviously we know you are the complainant in this case. We've read all the materials that you've provided, and you can now address the board.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to speak with you today. I'll just kind of touch on a few things that I noticed as we were going through the previous segment. In regard to the multiple drugs that are just kind of just hanging out in the doctor's office, there's like this cabinet with three drawers, and it's various drugs, controlled, not controlled, unlabeled drugs, random pills that are in a pill vial that don't have a name. I've witnessed Dr. Marvell go to that drawer, pick out something for a client and give her, say it was Serenia. I know she does this a lot with Serenia. It was given to a client to just, hey, try this out. I'm not gonna charge you, you know. In regard to the tourniquet, they would use the red or blue ones that were used in human blood draws in addition to rubber bands. I don't know if that makes a difference or not. As far as it being mandated, suppose it wasn't. It was heavily pushed, if that makes sense. And in regard to the butterfly catheters, she would maybe have three 23-gauge butterfly catheters over the course of my 4 months being there. You know what I mean? It just wasn't safe. No one was familiar with any type of fear-free type of restraint with the cats, burritoing, using a C-hold, all these other things that we could do with a cat other than putting a tourniquet around the neck. In regards to Dr. Hayter, I met him 3 to 4 times over the course of my time there for 4 months because I was told he resides in California and he just pops in whenever. There were times where he was scheduled to come in and he didn't. So as far as him seeing what's happening on his property, I think that there is a lack of presence. And thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Douglas. Do any board members have questions for the complainant? Okay. Thank you. You may step back. All right. We'd now like to give Dr. Marvell and her attorney the chance to come forward again. And if you have any additional remarks, questions that you would like to ask.
I just have a few closing comments, and Dr. May as well. I just heard the complainants say, well, I suppose it wasn't mandated, referring to the feline blood draws. If you look at her complaint on page 2, it says all feline blood draws are mandated to use a tourniquet around the entire neck, ! Next page, it is mandated to use a tourniquet around the neck. So I think what we've got here is a less than desirable employment situation between the employee. This wasn't a good fit. If the complainant's intent in bringing this complaint was to have the practice update some things and do some things. Doctor's been in practice for 40 years. She may be a bit old school. But the thing that's impressed me in analyzing this case is the extent to which the respondent veterinarians, instead of taking offense by the comments and the complaint from somebody that worked for them for only 4 months, they took everything completely serious, did corrective actions. Doctor has vowed not to use that technique, even though there's no prohibition against it. It's not per se malpractice to do a blood draw that way, but she's agreed not to do that going forward. And so if that was the intent behind her complaint, I think that's been accomplished. And I don't believe that any corrective action or disciplinary action should be taken against Dr. Marvell. No statutes or regulations per se were violated. Some things were done a little lax, and Victoria can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think the board has the power to order hoarder therapy against a veterinarian, but I think it's, in all seriousness, she just did things old school and maybe fell into some bad habits that have now been corrected.
Okay. Thank you. Do board members have any final questions specifically of Dr. Marvel? Okay, and then I apologize, Ms. Douglas, I have to, by law, give, because they're defending their license, I have to allow them to have the final say, so I can't let you. Thank you. Okay, so now I want to switch back to Dr. Hayter on the phone to see if you have any additional remarks or any questions that you wanted to share at this time.
No, I just want to reiterate the fact that we're really, you know, here to do our best and to practice above standards. You know, I truly apologize and feel badly for anything that we did below standards. Again, truly in our hearts, it was to serve our clients, you know, and to do the best that we could there. And we're really happy to reform any practices that need to be reformed. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I do see Ms. Solomon does have a question.
I have a very quick question. Where are you calling from? What state?
So I'm calling from California.
So Dr. Hayter, do you live in California or do you live in Arizona?
So I live in California. That's a simple answer. It's a complicated situation that has kind of been uprooted by this process too. I did live in Arizona when I purchased the practice. I was there for the majority of the shifts in issuing about the practice. Things are changing as Dr. Marvel is moving on in her career, working less. We have another full-time veterinarian there, but that's the deal now.
Okay, thank you.
I have a follow-up question about Victoria.
Yes.
Can responsible vet reside out of state?
Only if they're just doing mobile unit work.
Okay.
Okay. Dr. Hayter, I'm not sure if you could hear that, but Ms. Solomon did confirm with our executive director that responsible vets can only work out of the state of Arizona if they are a mobile unit. So.
Yes. So again, this is something, you know, and I talked to Victoria a little bit about this today. That has kind of been uprooted by this, and I wasn't aware of. I wasn't trying to skirt the rules or do something, you know, unique. But it looks like that's something that I'm gonna have to address going forward, potentially getting our full-time veterinarian to take over the premise. But we're gonna make a plan for that.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, if there's no further questions, this concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. Again, Ms. Frost is the lead, and we're going to take each of these individually. We can discuss them as a together, however you wish to do it.
The complaint, the reason that the cases are open, that's one thing. So the complaint, and I believe I said this in the IIR, does look like a disgruntled employee when you read the complaint at face value, because it kind of sounds like outlandish, right? But the reason that I felt like it had merit was because that premise inspection and following up with the complaint kind of gave it, you know, a little bit of validity there. And so I can definitely sense there's frustration. And of course, you know, we want the best for our patients. I would say that everybody said that from the complaint to the respondents. You know, we want to do what's best, and clearly some things needed to change, and it sounds like that is the case going forward. As far as 2469 for Dr. Maribel, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation, but I would recommend a letter of concern to keep up on relevant procedures as far as currently acceptable, you know, procedures. Again, not because things that were done 40 years ago are outlawed, but because we have better ways to do them now. So that's my motion.
Second.
A motion and a second, and I agree. And Dave, you mentioned several times, you were talking about it old school, and we see that a lot here. And I understand for some of our, you know, longer working vets, you know, you're like, but, you know, we've been doing it this way. But you just make such a great point that these are things that we learn as time goes on. And so.
I just want to add, because I find myself quickly approaching that old school.
Me too.
I'm like, I'm going to admit this out loud. But what I would say is I think there are some things that, yes, there are better ways of doing them, but it doesn't mean that what was done was necessarily wrong. And I think there's a push in the profession actually to kind of move back to some of those lower cost treatment options and look at them and say, are they really wrong? Or did we just think that this was a better way of doing it, which may have been more expensive and may be part of the cost of care rising so rapidly that people can't afford it? So before we place judgment on old school techniques, I just would want to say that some of them may have validity to them, and we just have to spend some time doing some research and documentation to prove that.
Yes. Okay. But we didn't really pick on those things. Right. We picked on things that expired in the early 90s.
Right. That's, well, and logs and things like that. Yes, all of those, yes.
Those things current, matter.
They do matter. Right. Okay. So we have a motion and a second to dismiss the case 2469 against Tracy Marvel, issuing a letter of concern with, again, just kind of professionally acceptable.
To keep up on,
yes,
current and professionally acceptable procedures.
And I would also say to the complaint, like, there's sometimes there are mismatches in employment, right? And there's nothing wrong with what she wants to see.
Absolutely.
And how she wants to care for pets. And Fear Free, I love it. It's amazing. And that is a practice style. And I hope that she finds a practice that fits her needs, because not everybody's a perfect match, right? Okay. There's just different personalities and things like that. So it's, I don't want her to think that she was necessarily wrong. It's just right. Not been a good
and
passion.
Again, not discouraging, you know, it is hard and brave to come forward to when you have a complaint, you know, against a former employee. Are you tattling? Are you, you know, trying to bring, you know, about change? So I think it's worth noting as well. But okay, so we've got a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you for being here. Now, with regard to Dr. Hader.
Yes, so 2470, so obviously Dr. Hader was named, but also is the responsible veterinarian. With that being said, you know, emphasizing, again, the things that were said by Dr. Marvell were echoed. That's excellent. Having reverse distribution is a necessary business expense when you do have expired controlled substances or hazardous things. But also keeping in mind that we are, that if you are a registrant that keeps inventory of controlled substances, that you are responsible for all of the Controlled Substance Act, not just the parts that you decide apply or that you're familiar with. So one of which being controlled substances, if they're in your practice, you must comply fully. So you take those back from somebody, you have to have an invoice, you have to have your logging completely maintained. There's so many pieces to that. It's just probably not worth the risk or the hazard. Going back to, there were a lot of things that were found in the premise inspection, which puzzled me, because even with a self-inspection in 2021, those things would have been easily identified. I have had the pleasure of going through a few of my own self-inspections because of the COVID situation, and it's very well done. So even if you are not a Tracy or a Victoria or an Annalise, and as far as having experience inspecting practices, it was a very nicely self-guided tour on what you should be looking for. And there were so many things missed that terrifies me, because did anybody actually look? We just signed off.
Did they actually?
Yeah, that's frightening. And so with that being said, I, a few different things. I would not really sure how to say this. I would direct board staff to do re-inspect within a year.
We already are.
You are? Oh, good. Very good. That, and then with the new information, again, brought to our attention by the complaint that the premise license holder doesn't reside in the state, that is an issue. And again, trying to emphasize that if you're a premise license holder, if you're a veterinarian in the state, it is your responsibility to know what you're responsible for, and this is one of those things. So that needs to get addressed. I'm not really sure how to put that out there.
I think, though. Yeah, giving him an
letter
opportunity.
Of concern?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's fine. Letting him know, he. Yes.
What does that do to the current status of the premise license? The question to Victoria.
Well, I'm trying to find, where does it state that they have to reside in Arizona to be here? I'm not finding it. Yeah, I just couldn't find it. I don't know what I was missing.
Is there a way to do a letter of concern where we just say within 14 days you have to have submitted an application?
But it is a violation, so that's what I was saying. Yeah. I don't really know how to.
It's a violation.
Because a letter of concern is typically a
not
a potential violation. This is a known violation at this point.
It's a known violation that none of us, even those of us sitting on the board.
So let me just put that out
okay,
there,
guys,
right?
So
like,
Tracy,
I was going to say, is my court reporter
the court reporter. Yes.
Mark, I think it's right in front of your laptop.
Yeah. Maybe it's 707. Let me see.
Madam Chair, Dr.
Yes.
Wright, it's 322272B2.
322272?
72B2.
Okay. I was looking at the rules, I think, so.
I mean, can't we, is there a way to just say we need to? Well, it's a violation that needs to be fixed, but it was one that was not known. And yes, you could say we should know everything, but those of us sitting here in the room still had to ask where it was because we weren't even sure. So I'm just like, I don't know.
I think one of the things
it's
that
it's a violation,
but
it's not.
It does to me. It might not to you, but it does to me.
Mark has something to share.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I think one of the things that you could do based upon the discussions is to just direct him to, within 2 weeks, fix it. If not, it'll be on the agenda for your review next month.
Okay.
So moved. Okay. You want to make that motion, Nikki? Sorry.
So did you have?
So in 2470, I would
make a motion.
Okay, make a motion that the violation in 322272B2 is addressed within 2 weeks by Dr. Hayter. If not, it'll be agendized for the next board meeting.
Perfect.
Okay. And then that's my motion.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank
Dr.
you.
Dr. Hayter, understand that part?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, I mean, it's 14-day, the process has to look like I need to have a discussion with my full-time veterinarian, and I got to get her to agree to it and then start the paperwork. So if I could have 30 days, I will get on it. I'll call her today.
But it's not 30 days to get it approved. It's to get it submitted. We need 14 days to get it submitted. So you have 2 weeks to talk to her and get her on board and get it submitted, and then the paperwork can come out.
Yeah, she just broke her wrist, and I think she's going in for surgery tomorrow. So that's part of what, I mean, if it's 14 days, it's 14 days. Like I said, I'm on it, but 30 days would be great.
We just passed it for 14.
Yeah, sorry. I say we stick with 14. If for some reason 14 doesn't work, please contact Victoria and let us know.
It'll be on the next agenda.
Yeah, right? But let her know before the 14 days.
Yeah, don't ignore it.
Okay, this concludes the portion of the informal interview, which the board hears testimony. The board has voted to dismiss case 2469 and then to find a violation in case 2470,
It's a motion.
Yeah, okay. So you will receive written confirmation of the board's action shortly. Thank you all for being here. If you have any questions, please contact the board's executive director. This concludes the informal interview. So thank you, everyone.
Next.
Can we just hold on 1 second? Okay. I just want to clarify. So case 2470 was a dismissal.
And then we made a motion
so it was a dismissal.
Did we vote on a dismissal though? I don't think we actually voted on a dismissal.
We did not. Okay. I wanted to
clarify. Oh, okay. Well, I'll amend.
New motion
to dismiss 2470.
Second.
Okay, motion and a second to dismiss case 2470. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. I don't think I have to reread the end again.
Good job.
So thank you.
Tracy was on.
Okay. Great catch. Okay.